What's up, Wisconsin? Happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to the Inside Wisconsin Studios. Trevor Thomas, John Anderson. John, I've got the margarine ready. You got your butter ready. Like, we'll maybe revisit that clip in this show, but happy Thanksgiving, man.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. And just, I'll be honest, given our discussion last time this year, thanks for not inviting me to your house so I don't have to eat, you know, all the wrong foods, or at least the foods that I like, but prepared completely wrong. And then the last thing, you got to have pecan pie. I'm not a pumpkin guy. You got to have pecan pie. And then I'm really stringent on that because it's like I have to have, it's only my grandmother's. I won't even risk eating other people's pecan pie. I just won't have it. Totally anti. Are you lactose intolerant? Not
have my have a chest pain at the moment, but I'm all right. No worries.
Are you lactose intolerant and not, no. Just not telling us?
No, not at all.
Yeah, then that would end the show right there. If you were lactose intolerant, show's over.
See, it was
can't have it. All right. So those are the five. We've got really, it's a remarkably the same five, and yet I couldn't eat at your house and you can't come to mine.
Our lists were similar, just compared and completed differently.
Right. You just go, hey, it's not like I want you to choke on the cheesy potatoes, but, you know, just you have or the little whatever you got, the Funyuns on top of your green, whatever. Just you go enjoy that all you want. And we will. Happy Thanksgiving to you and happy Thanksgiving to everybody listening. And our thanks to everybody who continues to put up with the lunacy that is this program.
We love you, too. So no Packer football on Thanksgiving Day this year, but we're going to talk Packers football. Our guest today, former Packers general manager Ron Wolf. Man, history lesson in the making here.
Yeah, I had a great trivia question, and I'm like, you know what? No, this is. Let's listen to Ron Wolf. He's going to say really much things that are much more interesting than us.
What was the trivia question?
It was just the last Super Bowl played entirely in daylight, which involved the Raiders. Super Bowl 11 against the Vikings. It was in Pasadena. It was the last one that was played entirely in sunshine. Since then, it gets deeper and deeper into the park.
Can we just move that thing to Saturday and be done?
Ron Wolf, obviously, who began his career and had a long, great career with the Raiders before he ever showed up in Green Bay. So I thought maybe that was relatable. I just think we should talk to Ron Wolf.
Okay, let's go.
Inside Wisconsin is brought to you by BayCare Clinic, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, Roltec, Festival Foods, Capital Credit Union, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, American Family Insurance, Miller Lite, and Aaron's Company.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us. No introduction needed. That's former Packers GM Ron Wolf. Ron, thanks for being here on Inside Wisconsin.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
He is. You are the architect of the resurgence of the Green Bay Packers that I think we still see right in here to 2022. I don't think there's any doubt that the foundation you built is a house we continue to add stories to every year, every season. I will say that as a kid who is 57, when I was a kid, that the Raiders were far more interesting than the Green Bay Packers. But I will try to keep this as Patrick's Packers centric as possible. But I'm going to have some Raiders questions that I can't get rid of. But we know what you left with. There were the Super Bowls and the success and what we see now. What'd you find when you got to Green Bay and took the job?
I tell you what, I tell you, the big thing I found when I got there was that I really didn't know anything about the Packers franchise. And very fortunately, I had an opportunity to watch a video put out by Ray Scott on public television. And in that video, I learned so much about the history of the Green Bay Packers. And with that, I was able to take advantage of the marvelous history in that city by the bay in Wisconsin. And we played on that. We played on the legacy of the players. When you walk into Lambeau Field and you see those magical names surrounding the playing field, you know right away who they are and what they represented and the team that they represented. And we were able to take that and turn that around into a positive.
That's fascinating that you didn't know much about Green Bay, because I feel like a lot of the players that you brought here, Ron, echoed that. What's Green Bay? Who's Green Bay? Where is Green Bay?
You know, the great thing about the Green Bay, living in Green Bay, was you could drive to work in about 10 minutes, never encounter a traffic jam. You, And we sold things like that. We sold the schools. We sold the friendliness of the community, what it meant to be a Packers player. We asked these guys when they came in to do things, represent the Green Bay Packers and be professionals. That's it. They didn't have to, you know, go to tea parties or this party somewhere or appear for the owner's wife somewhere, because we didn't have that. And fortunately for me, when I got there, they had been bad. You know, they had been actually terrible. And we were able to take that small thing and look at it today. I mean, I just, every time I go on television and I see, you know, they show the shot of Lambeau Field, I can't imagine that look at that. 80, I think it was 83,000 seats now. Unbelievable. And what a great tribute to the fathers of Green Bay that had the foresight to see this. And what an aptly named stadium, Lambeau Field. I mean, I would walk on that field, and I would get chills. Of course, pundits would always say, of course, it's -5. But I would get chills just experiencing that thrill of being a member of the Packers. As I said earlier, to have an opportunity to finish my career there, I mean, I couldn't ask for anything better. And very fortunately, we were able to have success there. And I'll get into that later. The success we had is remarkable. You know, win 25 straight games there. Everybody said that'll never happen. 841 winning percentage in Lambeau Field. Can't happen. Can't happen because the other guys were in the 300s. So anyway.
But tell us the truth. As a GM, like with the Raiders, and maybe even in your time with the Bucs, did you ever threaten to send somebody to Green Bay if they didn't shape up before you got here? Did you go, I will send your ass to Green Bay?
No.
Okay.
No, I never.
Because you hear that stories, right? Like, that was it. Now it's like, we'll send you to Cleveland. But for a time, it was, man, you don't want me to send you to Green Bay.
Yeah, I worked for a long time in the Raiders scouting department with a guy named Angelo Coy, who played with the Bears. And he said, how did you threaten them? When they play poorly, it's going to send up north, up to Green Bay. So, yeah, I know that.
To the point about Lambeau Field, I have had friends that, whether it's from college friends from Missouri or out here, we've gone down there and we've been on the field pretty close. And you stand in that end zone and you go, and they look around, they go, oh, that's nice. And all of a sudden you go, you see where you're standing? That's where Lombardi went in for the touchdown. And then all of a sudden they just get this sort of whole overwhelming thing. I had that. I was at St. Andrews one time. I was walking, and the guy goes, "You see where you're standing at?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, that's where Bobby Jones took a divot." And you're like, "Holy crap!" Right? Like, do you feel that same kind of whatever? It kind of envelops you more than anything.
Well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, the greatest experience I had, I was 37 years, and the greatest experience I ever had was when we won the title for the right to go to the Super Bowl in Lambeau Field. It was just remarkable. What a great place. What a final note to my career up there was that. Because everybody said, you're an idiot to go to Green Bay. You're not going to survive up there. But we got fortunate. We were able to get a once-in-a-lifetime quarterback, a tremendous coach, probably the greatest, if not the greatest, free agent of all time. He and Deion Sanders, Reggie White and Deion Sanders, are the two best until that fellow went down there to Tampa. I've forgotten his name. From Michigan or something. But anyway.
Yeah.
But that's just a tremendous, tremendous place. And no one can duplicate that. I mean, people try. You know, people say, oh, you can't do this. You can't duplicate Lambeau Field. There is like that, and the experience of wearing that jersey and running on that field, remarkable.
So what did you tell people that said, Ron, you're an idiot for taking? What did you say? No, this is why this is actually a good fit. This is why I can have success there.
Well, you know, I just looked at him and smiled. You know, what are you going to say? I mean, everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's going to tell you how to do it, everything. You're not alone anymore. There's so many. When I made that trade for Brett Favre, for example, you would not believe the literature I received. The mail, because those were mail days, not, you know, not people came twitch you, but text you. That's the word I'm looking for. But wow, it worked
out. With that being said, I did think about that, about making that trade for Brett in an age where social media didn't exist. Can you imagine? I mean, granted, you guys got the old snail mail, right? Bob Harlan talked about getting letters with everything. Imagine, though, GMing today with how crazy it is with social media. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I tell you what, I was in there at the right time in the NFL. I couldn't exist today with his phone. What I used to do to get away was I'd go out and scout colleges, college players. And for 5 hours, I was all alone on the practice field, relaxing, watching what I like to do. No one could reach me. That's not the case today. Everybody can reach you, but everybody's got an opinion. A lot of that they just throw up on the wall. If it sticks, fine. If it doesn't stick, hey, move on. A lot of guys making a good living spouting baloney.
Yeah, I work with a lot of those guys. how'd you know Holmgren was your right guy?
I think right with the interview. He came in and we just clicked. It was one of those things. We just clicked right away. I mean, I was so afraid because I didn't really have a backup after Mike Holmgren. I had talked with Parcells, Bill Parcells, but he had turned it down because he had to have open heart surgery. And the interesting part of this whole thing, where you got to give a lot of kudos to Bob Harlan, he said, you talking to me, you run the football operation. That opened it up. We were able to convince Mr. Holmgren to come to Green Bay and, you know, rest of history, what he accomplished.
So selling Wisconsin, you talked about selling the schools and all those things, and a lot of people don't know where Green Bay is, and you talked about the 10-minute commute, but you had never lived here either. So you were here a few years. What was it about Green Bay, Wisconsin, that you fell in love with that allowed you to speak so authentically when you were telling players, hey, get up here?
I think, to me, it was a tradition. I'm a like a pro football history buff, and it's a tradition – that Green Bay represented, what the Packers represented. Everybody remembers the bad times in the 50s and some of the bad times in the 70s and the 80s. But you talk about a legacy. What Curly Lambeau accomplished in Wisconsin, remarkable. And thank God they named the stadium after him because of what he represented to the National Football League, what that city represents to the National Football League. They can never duplicate that. And that's the great thing of it's a once-in-a-lifetime type affair and type situation. And you look at the uniform. Take that uniform. That's a unique uniform. I know when I got there, I wanted to change it because to get that losing stuff out of the equipment room, but we didn't do that, and it's unique now. Look at the success they've had. Do you realize since 1992 they've had a heck of a run up there,
yeah,
of which we laid the foundation.
I have one follow-up on that uniform change. So your good friend Pepper Burris, I booked 2 hours on my calendar to go and hang out with Pepper at his house. 4 hours later, I told Pep, I got to get out of here, man. He shows me one of two, and it sounds like you have the other one, of the idea that you had to change the Packers uniforms to what looked like the Notre Dame colors. Do you have the other set that you had made?
No, I do not. I don't know what happened to that. Huh. He's got well, that. He's got one. I often wonder what happened to that. You know, he's a pack rat, and so he's got it. I'll be darned. But you know who modeled for us on Lambeau Field when he was running around was Ted Thompson. And all I did, you know, you looked at that and you said, there is no way we're changing his uniform to look like that. It just didn't mesh.
Anyway. I'd be curious with the other one is there's a story. It's true. I've seen the picture. Some LA, it's crazy. Just an LA artist. He was a designer and artist, and they took an old picture of his, and it turned out he had sketched the original Vikings uniform that we used. And it was just on the back of a frame of a thing that they found when it came through there. You mentioned Bob Harlan, who, as much as people get down on the Dan Devine era, right? We have Dan Devine to thank for Bob Harlan being in the organization. He came from the Cardinals, and you played college baseball. How is it we have two baseball guys that made a football franchise this successful?
You got me. You got me. Now, wait a minute. You put that right. You played college. I did. But I was before the designated hitter. In fact, I hit ninth. And, so I was one of those good field no hits, maybe. Yeah, so maybe I got a hit. But I could get on first, and I'd be on third in about three pitches. So that may be hard to believe if you know what I look like, but I could run those bases.
So John brings up Bob Harlan, and clearly without Bob, there is no Green Bay Packers, and then without no Ron Wolf, there's no Green Bay Packers. And you probably share with Bob this idea of saving the Green Bay Packers. I'm certain you spent some time kind of pondering that, Ron, don't you think?
Well, you know, a lot of the older writers up there that are no longer with us, Bud Leaf, for one, told me that that I saved the Packers. And that meant an awful lot to me. But there are a lot of people involved in this, not just Ron Wolf. And, you know, having an opportunity to get a player like Brett Favre is few and far between. Boy, you know, that's one chip that just fell perfectly for me. And, I mean, they talk about the new Yankee Stadium in New York, and it was originally the house that Ruth built. Well, this is no question the house that Favre built up there in Green Bay right now. And to have a guy like that captain your ship for so long, you're very, very fortunate. You say it's once in a lifetime. Now, I was in this thing, as I said earlier, 37 years, and I've been around some outstanding players. A lot of guys are in that Hall of Fame, but I was never around one like Brett Favre.
How long did it take to get that deal done when you called Atlanta?
About 5 months to get it done. But it didn't take that long once the season was over. But I was sitting up there in that Atlanta press box. Ken Harrock came to me and said, you know, if I wanted to see Brett throw, I needed to go down and watch him throw. I knew right away we had a shot. And I was sitting there with Bob, and I was choking on a hot dog. I said, you know, we got a chance to get a quarterback, and it's going to cost us a first-round draft choice. He didn't blink. He said, well, we're having an executive committee meeting Tuesday. You can bring it up to the executive committee, which I did. And I'm sure when I left the room that they really jumped all over Bob and said, you hired this idiot from New York. But, you know, I mean, he's talking about Lou Gehrig. He's talking about the number four. I mean, we can't even pronounce the guy's name. But anyway, it worked.
It did work. All right. Well, we're going to pick up where that left off when we come back in just a bit. Ron Wolf, former Packers general manager, with us here on Inside Wisconsin.
Inside Wisconsin is brought to you by BayCare Clinic, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, Roll Tech, Festival Foods, Capital Credit Union, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, American Family Insurance, Miller Lite, and Aaron's Company.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button. Just get with us. Could we get through the holidays without beer? Let's just cut to the chase. I don't think we could.
Well, let's see. We have Thanksgiving. There's three NFL games. The day after Thanksgiving, everybody usually now has off as well, and there's a billion college games. Yeah. No, how can you get through that? You know,
no, you listen, can't.
I can't get through a random Tuesday, but I'm talking about holiday season. You got to, you know, yeah, you can't. That just, it'd be senseless.
I remember showing you over the summertime the Miller Lite charcoal. Remember that? That beer coal or whatever they called it. I couldn't get a bag. I tried to buy it. There's now apparently an entire website dedicated to buying holiday gift things from Miller Lite. It's wild. Ornaments and all sorts of stuff. Shop.MillerLite.com.
Which is great, but the beauty of all that, which is awesome, you get a sweatshirt, you get all that, is that they never get away from the core product.
No, there's beer.
We got to stay with that. You know, we're branching out, but we're not becoming like ESPN one time. Remember, we tried to be a phone company. We sold ESPN the phone. Like, that's not what we do. We're going to do television and scores and highlights and content. So this is great. And you should go and buy all the stuff. But don't forget, they make beer.
Yeah, this is the whole idea of
Miller Lite. Terrific.
Tis Miller time. Enjoy Miller time with family and friends this holiday season. Miller Lite. Great taste, 96 calories. Go to MillerLite.com/InsideWisconsin to find delivery options near you so you can give the gift of Miller time this holiday season. J.A., you found beer this time in the...
I got my tires rotated, and the guy just... Well, I was sitting around waiting there at the old tire shop. Yep.
There's a beer fridge in all of them.
Load them up.
You know that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you can pick up Miller Lite pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Tis Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Happy holidays. It tis Miller time. All right, we're back in between segments with Ron Wolf. Time for another top five list brought to you by the University of Wisconsin-Platteville. UW-Platteville offers an affordable, top-rated program that prepares graduates to be leaders in the fields of agriculture and agribusiness, contributing to our state economy and making our communities even stronger. Find out more about Wisconsin's best agriculture program at uwplatt.edu. So I got the memo, and I'm not going to mess with any idea you have of this week's top five list. So without
what you're
further
saying
ado,
is you threw me a bone.
It's yours. What's up?
Well, so it was recently announced by the company I work for. That's ESPN Inc. ESPN, by the way, does not stand for anything anymore, right? It used to be Entertainment Sports Program. No, it's just ESPN. Doesn't stand for anything anymore. It's just initials. So every time somebody goes, hey, don't forget what the E stands for, it doesn't stand for anything anymore. Anyway, so we're bringing back the This Is Sports Center campaign. We haven't done those in a while. Very famous. One of the legendary advertising campaigns ever. Which, by the way, if you want a little hint, something strange about that, if you ever watch them again, it says This Is Sports Center. You know what the thing it never shows, never is in there? It never tells you what time the show is on. Most of the time, right? Everything always says, hey, it's, pick your thing, 60 minutes, Sunday, right? It's never said that. So we're bringing them back. I have no idea what they are. I have no idea if I'm going to be involved anymore because I'm an old has-been and, I'm on a limited work schedule, but luckily I've had a great volume of them that we're going to discuss. But first, I need your best one, or if you have five. Yeah. What do you got on the SportsCenter commercials?
Wait, so this reminds me, when my wife Amanda and I took a tour out there, you took us to a place where you could dial up any of the old This Is SportsCenter commercials. Still exist?
You know what? I haven't gone through that door since the pandemic. I go through upstairs. I know we remodeled some. It might be down there. But yeah, you're right. You could go through and touch them all. Yeah.
That was super cool. If there's one that... Obviously, the ones that you're in, I mean, we've been friends a long time.
I'm going to be selfish. I'm just going to do my commercials.
Oh, okay. Good. You do yours. The one that sticks out to everybody, I think, over the years is John Clayton, right? When he rips off his thing and pulls the hair and... Mom! I'm done with my segment! The late, great John Clayton.
Yeah.
So you must have been a top five list of the your favorite that you were a part of. Is that true?
I do. Do you have anything else besides John Clayton you'd like to get off your chest?
There's a few involving the devil when I think it's Stan Verrett goes into the elevator and
Jay Harris.
He asks if they're – who is it? Jay Harris.
Jay Harris, yeah.
They are going up and the devil goes, He just walks right out. That was good. Right. The devil is also the penguin when they're adjusting the thermostat. I remember that.
Yeah. The beauty's Poppy. In the simplicity, right?
It really is. It really is. Yeah. Wally and Big Poppy. When Big Poppy puts on Jorge Posada's Yankee hat, and Wally, their mascot, the Red Sox mascot, walks by. Classic. And then, of course, Bucky Badger. When he's what is he looking at? Surfing the web.
Yeah, all I know is it's apparently not PG-13, right?
It is not.
Benjamin B. Badger, whatever is. Did you know Bucky's real name is Benjamin?
No.
Yeah, I believe so.
Something new every day. All right, give it to me. This is gonna be fun.
Yeah, we'll do that. Real quick on the and this will get cut, but who cares? On the hat thing with Big Poppy, when he went into the Hall of Fame, we had him on, and the last question I asked him was, "Hey, just so I know, are you going into the Hall of Fame? Are you going to put a Yankees cap on, like the one you got from Jorge, or are you going to wear your Red Sox?" And he just started laughing. He goes, "You know that, man." Took off the mic and left. That was it. End of interview. I'm not listening to your absurdity anymore. You're a dope.
You're not.
All right, so here we go. Number five, the Manning brothers.
Yes.
Who doesn't love that?
Wet right? Willie.
You idiots. They're walking along, and mom and dad and Cooper's up there up front. So that's number five, where I show them an inane hallway. I like to tell people you always get distracted by the Mannings. If you really listen to the narration of the tour, it's really that's the high comedy of the whole thing, and it's not Eli getting kicked in the butt. Someday, if we have them, I will further expand on that because there's a great story about the birth order of those two. Number four is the one I did, saving a spot for Stan Verrett or for Stewart. Stan Verrett goes by, won't let him sit in the chair, but somehow Maria Sharapova comes by and it's fine. Totally
it's
good.
All yours.
Not a problem. You can have it. Stu goes by and like, what's the deal? She has a reputation. First off, she's even more beautiful in person than she is. And you'd think, oh, my gosh, she's going to be high maintenance. Unbelievable. Couldn't have been nicer. Came in with a little bowling bag with a dog in it, which was kind of fun. And I made her wait almost an hour and a half to finish it up because I had to go do some paperwork. They're always for a loan for the house that I'm sitting in now.
No kidding.
They always run behind. I told them, I said, I have to go. And they're like, you can put – I said, I told them days and days in advance. So I told Maria I had to go, and she's like, fine, we'll be here. I came back 90 minutes later, and the really funny part was the banker that was doing it. He said, did I take away from anything? He said, no, I was just having lunch with Maria Sharapova. And he's like, fine. So now the next day I go back to pick up the paperwork. That's how fast. I went and signed and then left. Picked it up the next day, and I gave him a picture of me and Maria Sharapova sitting at lunch. And he gave me a better rate on my money market for putting me out. So that was amazing.
That's awesome.
So number three is the only one that I have ever done. And until we opened L.A., was the only time we went somewhere else to do a commercial. Everybody always came to Bristol. For Tiger Woods, we went to Vegas. So we went to Vegas for Tiger Woods. And two things. One, I shot number three is the one I did with Stu where we're playing ping pong and we lose the ping pong ball and he gets one out of the lottery machine. Right. That's the premise of it. What we never saw was the one that Stuart and I shot that never aired.
What?
And so Tiger is there, and he did the one Tiger with the gallery phone. So we're in the lunchroom, and Tiger's got the green jacket over his thing, and Stuart and I take turns going, man. You know, Stuart looks at the thermostat, and Tiger finally just goes, y'all can't wear the jacket.
Oh, why didn't that make it?
He never won the Masters again until this time. And Stuart obviously had passed away and everything, but that one stayed in the vault. Yeah. And he just was like, looks at us like, you guys are so pathetic. Goes, you can't wear the jacket.
It's just put it on.
So there's that. That one is number three. Number two, another rest in peace, was the crocodile hunter Steve Irwin, where he takes out Albert the alligator when he comes out from the elevator.
He holds you back, right? He's like,
I try to hold him. Yeah, he puts me back, and then I'm embarrassed. And he's talking about lacing up his bootstraps, man. And we do take after take out of this where he just blows up the alligator. They're having to super glue teeth back in the alligator. And we get done, and he's like, how is that, mate? You know, it was great because I was a little worried. He goes, because, you know, I've torn my ACL, and I have to have surgery. So he's blowing up Albert the whole time, With a torn up ACL.
Jeez.
There you go. And number one, we're going to save for John Wisconsin.
Oh, it's the John Wisconsin story.
We're going to. It's not at all. Has nothing to do with Wisconsin. I just thought, you know what? Maybe people will stick through the rest of this now, and then they can either, you know, stay or maybe forge ahead. But I just figure that's just a cliffhanger. We just call that a cliffhanger. Number one, that'll be in John Wisconsin.
We're back inside Wisconsin. Trevor Thomas, John Anderson, and Ron Wolf, former Packers GM. So we closed that out about talking how grateful we were to have Brett Favre. But with Brett Favre then and the success that you had, you got another insane free agent we mentioned in the first segment, Reggie White. So Red Lobster is involved in this story, but take us through what it was like courting Mr. Reggie White.
Well, I tell you what, our guys did such a tremendous job of recruiting him. And the guy that never gets recognition for what he accomplished, Mike Reinfeldt, how he was in charge of the purse, if you will, up there, the money. And he did an amazing job of making the T's cross and the I's get dotted and getting it done. He got it done. We had a lot of help. Guys like Ray Rhodes helped. Certainly Mike Holmgren helped. I'll never forget Reggie came in, and he'd been given the keys to the city of Atlanta. He'd been given a lot of different things, but he comes to Green Bay, and wouldn't you know, it's snowing. Ugh. And he gets picked up in a Green Bay limousine, which, as everybody knows, is a four-wheel drive Chevy, and is driven to Red Lobster to have lunch. And he orders catfish, but it comes not filleted, comes with bones. And the owner told him, Reggie, you sign with Green Bay and we'll have filleted catfish. Now, that might have played an important role in that, but I happen to think that maybe the roses we sent every other day to Mrs. White might have had something to do with it too. But the most important thing was the money. And he came for the money. What a tremendous football player. And I remember when he passed, it was kind of like the feeling, it was kind of like Superman died. It's impossible. But boy, he sure played well for us.
What did he bring aside from just being a superior football player? What did he add to the locker room that helped change culture there?
Well, I think I'm not so sure he changed the culture, because little known fact, that was Leroy Butler's defensive locker room. Leroy kind of ran that thing. Favre had the offense, Butler had the defense. But what he had was greatness written all over him. And I think that's what, you know, you exert yourself, you display what you can do, we're going to be better for that. And, we had a pretty good defensive team. You know, that 96, 97, 98 defensive team was pretty dang good. Mm-hmm. And we had some really good players.
So I was going to get to Leroy, because it always seems they go, you know, the Favre trade and the signing of Reggie White are the big deal. And I always think that sometimes Leroy gets shortchanged a little in that when you lay out that scenario. And God bless him that the man finally made the Hall of Fame. You talk about guys that were overdue. But he was there, and he had tasted some of that losing. Give me, in your view, the importance of Leroy Butler in the whole scheme of the success.
Well, I think the importance of Leroy Butler was the fact that he was the ultimate strong safety. He could cover, he could dog, and he could tackle. And what else you need? Plus, he was there when it mattered. He made the play when it mattered. And as I said, it was his locker room. He was such a dynamic force in that locker room. I have to understand, as a GM, you can't stroll through there very much. You've got to stay away from that. You've got to let the coaches coach and the players play. So, but to have a guy like Butler in that locker room was tremendous. And, you know, we reaped the rewards of that. How tremendous he was. Because you think about it, you're gonna draw up what is a dynamic safety in today's football. Well, the thing is, Butler could play today because he can cover. And, you know, that position has disappeared now where he played. Rarely do you see those blow-em-up safeties anymore in the game.
It's just over 20 years, Ron, since you retired. Do you still stay in contact with all these guys? Like John mentioned, Leroy just went into the Hall of Fame. I would imagine maybe you talked to him. Is that what's going on? Who do you still chat with?
I chat with Favre. Every once in a while, I'll chat with Leroy, but that's few and far between. No, I stay away from the guys. I really do. And, it's a long time ago. You know, I keep looking at that and saying, my God, is that long ago? Seems like it was only yesterday. You know, the thrill of the success that we had up there. And, I can't erase this 841 winning percentage in Lambeau Field when I was there. I was there 9 years. And in those 9 years, we had six guys become general managers in other franchises in the NFL, two of whom took their teams to Super Bowl victories. And, we just had a heck of a run. And I'm very proud of all our accomplishments, all the things we did. And, I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud when you walk into Lambeau Field, you'll see my name up there. Yeah. People probably say, who in the hell is that guy? But anyway.
See, I don't think they do. I think they tell the next generation who that guy is. You're nine years there. Listen, players, because of age, sort of age out of the game. Coaches, they say, are hired to be fired eventually. Is there an expiration on a GM in a job? Can you stay too long? Is there a feel for how long you should be with an organization?
You know, I don't know about that. I've read that there's supposed to be, but I know that when I decided to hang them up, I could no longer do the job the way I wanted to do the job that was necessary for the benefit of the Green Bay Packers' entire operation. So it's good for me to get out of there, because it was no longer enjoyable. And that's just the way I felt. And I just couldn't. There weren't enough hours in the day anymore for me to do it the way I wanted to do it, the way I wanted to run it. And I just felt that it's best to step away.
And yet, owners still hire coaches to be coach and GM at the same time, which is a mystery to me. Was there ever a moment, you talked about you still like to go out on the road and scout to get away when that time. Like, is that still your heart? Like, at some point, you just kind of like to be at a college stadium with a stopwatch and a pad of paper?
No, I've lived through that.
Good.
That's one that's been there and done that. I have no desire. If somebody said, oh, are you going to go to Indianapolis? I have no desire to go to Indianapolis. Already been there. Already done that. It's over. You know, sit down. Let somebody else do it.
So when you were done, you were done.
I was done.
Good for you.
Exactly.
That's nice. Nice to not have to rethink it when you go through it.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. And, as I said earlier, and we've talked about this, to have a chance to end your career where I ended it, in that city, it's a once-in-a-lifetime feeling. And boy, was I blessed to have that opportunity to come to Green Bay, Wisconsin.
We were chatting about snow as we got going. It's snowing where John lives. It snowed here in Wisconsin this past weekend. And anybody that spent 9 years here that didn't grow up here, you got out pretty fast. How long have you been in Florida now, Ron?
Well, we had a place down here since 94. And I've been down here, I think, since 04. So been here a long time.
Just another Wisconsin snowbird down there.
Yeah, got it.
Hey, as much as the success of the Packers is tied to your legacy, you are arguably part of the most famous AFL franchise as well. and pretty close to the startup in there, right? They were what, the league was 2 or 3 years when you joined the Raiders. What was that organization like? Because you hear AFL stories, but 1963 in the AFL had to be, you want to talk about the Wild Wild West. What kind of operation did you walk into there?
Well, we walked into Al Davis was the head coach and general manager. And he was patient enough with me to take me and train me from ground zero to what it take do what it takes to be a success in professional football. And I have to, like you said, I mean, you're talking about a team of the Oakland Raiders. I mean, they had no money. We played in a Rector Set stadium called Frank Yule Field, which seated 22,000 people. We had a Quonset hut for a locker room on game day. And what he did, he being Al Davis, is he took that franchise and he stressed one thing and one thing only. The Raiders. The Oakland Raiders. Everything was for the betterment of the Raiders. And he was named commissioner in 1966 in the American Football League. The merger came. I was the one guy he took with him from the Raiders to New York. And we came back in 67 and went 13-1 and won the championship. He made some outstanding trades during that time. Got a quarterback by the name of Daryl LaMonica, defensive back by the name of Willie Brown, who's in the Hall of Fame. A quarterback place kicker by the name of Blanda, who's in the Hall of Fame. Jim Otto was on that team. He's in the Hall of Fame. And then it just, from there, we just took off. And that silver and black thing became synonymous with winning. And we won.
You want to talk about a long time ago. That was a long time ago.
You got that right.
But that is when the Ron Wolf tree started. And here we are in 2022, and the Ron Wolf tree is still going strong and is the case today in Green Bay with Brian Gutekunst. Have you thought about that? I mean, the greatest of the greats have their own tree, and there is significant evidence of a Ron Wolf tree in the NFL.
Yeah, no, I've thought about that, and I'm very proud of that. But you got to give credit to the guys that are doing it. And they've done it. Look at what John Schneider's accomplished up there in Seattle. Look at what Ted Thompson did there in Green Bay. John Dorsey had a heck of a run in Kansas City. Other people are getting credit for it, but you know, he laid the foundation. And I think he might be the guy that made that trade for that guy named Mahomes. So those are guys that have done it and done exceptionally well. You know, Snyder's still active in it, and that's nice to see that at least one is still hanging around. I'm sorry, Brian is hanging around too. Very good, he's hanging around. There's two of them.
Yeah, so far he is. Yep, you know, just all depends on how you're doing, right? That's a day-to-day job. That's
no, you got that
quarterback
right.
And head coach and GM. It's a job that everybody in the stadium can do better than the guy who actually has the job.
You got that right.
Totally. Every plumber is far more qualified than you is. I have no idea how you ever got the job to begin in the first place.
Yeah, I understand that.
So you're there with the Raiders. Tell me about Super Bowl II when you lost to the historic Green Bay Packers.
Oh, it was a terrible experience. Because we thought we were pretty good, but we had the best back certainly in the history of the American Football League was a guy named Clement Daniels, and we lost him getting ready to play that game. But I think we were just overwhelmed by the aura, if you will, of Vince Lombardi and the Green Bay Packers. I'll give you an example. Lying in a hotel, and they're showing. I came down early with Al Davis, down early to Miami for the game, and I'm lying in bed watching the news, and they're showing a picture. It said, "Here come the NFL champion Green Bay Packers," showing the airplane, the landing, and guys getting off the airplane, and showing Lombardi and Starr and those guys. And then it says, "And here comes the American Football League champion, the Oklahoma Raiders." Right away. So, uh-oh, we're in a heap of trouble here, boys. So, anyway.
Wow. So
that's my experience.
I knew about Oakland. I knew about flirting with Santa Clara and Los Angeles and Vegas. I forget the time you guys were in Oklahoma. I don't, you know, it's not as well publicized when you go through there. You had a great coach there, too. What made John Madden special as a head coach?
Oh, I think his love of the game and the fact that he was so smart. He was smart. He was certainly a player's coach. There's no question about that. And I think it always helped, though, to have that guy off to his right or left, you know, a little bit standing watching practice, who owned the team. I think that probably helped a little bit. But John was just superb during game days. And his love of the game. I think he took that now because I noticed that your network, Anderson, I noticed that they're lauding his thing, that they're doing something on Thanksgiving because of his broadcasting. He's a broadcaster, not a coach, a broadcaster. And I can't get over that. Fix that up, will you?
Listen, there and they always say he's got three generations. There are some people didn't even know he was a broadcaster. They just thought he was the dude on the cover of the football game.
The video game. Being in the Hall of Fame, I was asked to come and speak to certain schools down here in Florida. Well, I don't know enough now about what's going on, and I don't know anything about that game. Mm-hmm. And I would go speak and throw it open, and they'd all want to talk about the game. And I had no idea what the game is, or anyway, it's Madden's game.
It's all on him.
Yeah.
So we covered that Super Bowl. Now bring us back to Super Bowl 31. We have had a lot of the guys that were on that team on Inside Wisconsin, Butler included, and Frankie Winters and more. What was your favorite memory from winning Super Bowl 31?
Favorite memory?
Yeah, favorite memory.
I guess the fact that we won, you know.
So it's grabbing that trophy.
Yeah. Now that was, you think about, put yourself in my place, you think about all the people that told you, you know, you're wasting your time and you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that. And why'd you go to Green Bay and why'd you do it? Here we are, I think 5 years later with the Super Bowl trophy. And it was just a thrill to experience that, to experience everything that went with it. I know one of the things that really shocked me when I started up there was the away games, was all the fan support we had when we went to play away, the Packers. And the Packers stunk for, 25 years? 26 years. I think they had two playoff appearances, and one of those was a strike year.
Yeah.
Where they went 5-4. But the fans never stopped showing up in these way out of way places we used to play in those days. So that was a great tribute to the legacy of the Green Bay Packers. The fandom, and I'm sure, you know, I go around today, and those fans are a little spoiled up there now. they're used to
winning.
They're used to winning,
and it wasn't a great year when I got there.
Beg your pardon?
I said we're not having a great year right now. So if we're a little spoiled, we're starting to smell what it smells like again.
Yeah, well, as long as you got that 12, you get somewhere. That 12 and 33 are pretty. Big players.
Yeah. That if there's a dip, it won't be long. We've had a blip here and there. It's not like I tell people this all the time. Part of the reason people were petrified over the exchange from Brett to Aaron Rodgers is because people like me remember the 15 quarterbacks that were there before Brett Favre. And they're worried like, oh my gosh, are we going to get into a Randy Wright, David Whitehurst, Carlos Brown, Jim Delgazzo, Blair, just name them situation. And people were petrified of that. Back to the Super Bowl and you get the trophy. We all, people that are fans, and even to some degree what I do every day, you cover it, they see that as that's the culmination of the season. People I've talked to that are coaches and GMs are like, that's the culmination of like 5 years of work, not this year of work. Was that the sensation you had at down in New Orleans?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was just I was proud of what we were able to accomplish, and I was proud of the guys that made it all happen. The coaches, the players, the scouts, all the people that were involved. And, you know, with winning comes, you know, when you win that Super Bowl, suddenly there are guys you didn't think of that were responsible for that winning. They would come and visit me. They'd want raises and they'd want contracts. You know, they want this and that. And that was a little interesting experience for me personally. But that moment when it was all over, mm-hmm. and you achieved the height of your profession, it's a feeling that won't ever be erased in my memory.
You have a Super Bowl ring with the Packers. You have Super Bowl ring with the Raiders, those Super Bowl rings. In between, there's an 0-16 season in there in Tampa. And I realize you talk about the ultimate starting from scratch and nowhere. What is it like to start that team and suffer through that year and, well, those first couple of years where there was, you know, where you think you're building, but there's no tangible success on a scoreboard?
Yeah, well, that would be something you wouldn't wish your worst enemy to go through. Because what happens is all of a sudden you're like a pariah. No one wants to be around you. No one wants to go have lunch with you. No one wants to have dinner with you. Get away from me. And one of the great things about the early part of the American Football League was, you know, the draft was in November, which meant that in the springtime, you went around and you scouted all the college teams. And one of the people that I hung around with was a fellow by the name of Chuck Knoll, who was the defensive coordinator of San Diego and then went to Baltimore. And he let me travel with him. And what an education I received having that opportunity to be with him. I go to the Senior Bowl. Now, we just finished establishing a record that no one wants. He came over and said, tell me what you learned, because he had a similar experience. If you look at it, with Pittsburgh his first year, mm-hmm. I think he won one game his first year at Pittsburgh. One. And so, you know, that was very encouraging. But the bottom line is they say it helps you. Losing doesn't help anything. I mean, it doesn't make you stronger. It doesn't do anything. I mean, it makes you feel more insecure, if you want to know the honest truth. And the fact that we won our final two games, we went 0-26, that's kind of like, you know, Cal Ripken's record. That's a record that's never going to be broken. And, you know, to realize you were part of that kind of stings a little bit. But it all culminated in 2015 when I put on that gold jacket. And became a member of Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Where is that thing?
It's hanging right here. And I'm going to wear it pretty soon. Going to a festivity out in Las Vegas to honor Cliff Branch.
Oh. Cool. Glad to know it still
fits. That's another guy who should have been in the Hall of Fame umpteen years ago. That's ridiculous.
Oh, no, it is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And, you know, but, I mean, the thing... You know, I touched on this earlier, but the thing I just have a hard time grasping is, you know, you got a player like Lester Hayes, and he's not in the Hall of Fame. How can that be with some of these other jabonis you're putting in there, you know? So anyway.
We're 44 episodes in, and the first time jabroni was said was by Ron Wolf, in case you had that bet. That's great. All right, we'll wrap it up. Lightning Round is next with former Packers GM Ron Wolf. We're back in a bit. Inside Wisconsin.
Inside Wisconsin is brought to you by BayCare Clinic, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, Roll Tech, Festival Foods, Capital Credit Union, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, American Family Insurance, Miller Lite, and Aaron's Company.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us. If you didn't get the memo from our last episode with the CEO of Festival Foods, Mark Scogan, that's where you go to buy all your holiday meal stuff.
Sure.
I don't know how to be more obvious than that.
Listen, I'm trying to eat all the tailgate brats that you sent me after, because I made fun of you. Like, there's no way your family can eat all those. So I'm still up to my ears in brats, and I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'll try. I'm trying to save room for turkey. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's, man, it's a good time to own a grocery store. And if you got a really good one like Festival Foods, this is the place to go, right?
Yeah. Head to the website, festfoods.com. Literally right there, you can click on holiday meals and everything that you would want to know, from preparing a ham dinner to a turkey dinner, or somehow turning butter into a little turkey. You sent me a picture of that last year. Where did that come from?
I can't give sources, but every year I know where to find it, and I do have a turkey. It's butter, but it's a butter sculpture. It's just a small turkey.
All right, it's good.
Yeah, family's horrible because we're all like, I want to cut the head off. Can I cut that?
Jeez,
somebody wants to just take a few feathers. Somebody just went
what? Yeah. Oh man, it's Thanksgiving dinner, and there's nothing like it with Festival Foods. We are back, segment three, with former Packers GM Ron Wolf. It is the ever-famous lightning round. I get two fairly fast questions, and then John takes over. All right. Number one, Titletown, USA. You were connected to bringing the title back to Titletown, and now Ron Wolf Way runs into Titletown. I was looking at a map earlier, you guys. There are a lot of roads that run around Titletown here in Green Bay. There's one road that runs into Titletown, and it's Ron Wolf Way. What was that like, having a street named after you, Ron?
Unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Now, you know, I know it's not a very, very long street or very large thoroughfare, but what an honor. What an honor. And, you know, again, none of this would happen except for the people we had around us. And that's as much their street as it is mine. Very proud of that.
So here's one more. I told you earlier that I spent some time with Pepper Burris and looking at all of his Packer memorabilia. What is the one piece of Packer memorabilia that you have in your house that you're willing to share with us?
The one piece that I have?
Is there like a key piece?
That's an interesting question. Wow. Because I got several things of the Packers in my house here, but probably the, being in the Packers Hall of Fame, that's the one piece that stands out to me. I mean, again, I couldn't have done it without the help of so many individuals, but what an honor that is as well. When you think about, you know, I came from a town of 1,200 people, and they were all farmers in southern Pennsylvania. We didn't know anything. And we thought we knew everything. But like I said, I didn't even know where Green Bay was. But that is a huge honor.
All right. I've got a bunch of these. We'll go quick. You don't have to dwell a lot. But as I said, I have a lot of interest. I've made my case that I think Cliff Branch was unbelievable to watch. I got to know this guy many times when he came out to the Walter Camp All-American Awards. You guys drafted a punter in the first round in Oakland, and he just passed away, but he made it to Hall of Fame. How good a football player was Ray Guy?
Oh, he was an outstanding football player. You know, he's an All-American safety at Southern Mississippi.
Yeah.
And I think he was a three-time All-American, if you check it. What he did was he changed field position for the Oakland Raiders, because instead of going 60 yards, now they had to go 70, 80, 90 yards to score. And, you know, you can screw up a lot going that further, and that's what he meant to us. Mm-hmm. I remember we're sitting there, and he was in a hospital bed when we drafted him. He had just had an operation, and Joe DeLamalier is there. So we're thinking, oh, look at that. Mm-hmm. Do we take the player or do we take the punter? And because that's all we were doing do with him. He was going to punt. Mm-hmm. And we took the punter. The punter goes, I gotta add this now. The punter goes to college all-star game. We're playing the Buffalo Bills in a preseason game. He comes back from the college all-star game. I was a get-back coach then with the Raiders. I'm sitting there with Madden and put him in the punt. He wasn't supposed to put him in the punt. And he said, I hope this guy can punt. I've always punt. So he hits a duck. It flies right over Madden's head. I'm looking for a hole to climb into. And he's yelling at me. We know that screaming. Yeah, I thought you said he could punt. Anyway, he could punt.
We talked about Leroy Butler. Tell me about Leroy Selman. I worked in Oklahoma a lot for a long time, and the Selman name is gold in Oklahoma.
You know, that's the best player I ever personally drafted. And if he had played in a four-man front team, you know, you wouldn't be talking about all these other guys. You'd be talking about Leroy Selman, because he could do things at 235 pounds that a guy at 335 pounds couldn't do. He was so quick. He was tough. I mean, you talk about holding the hole. He could hold the hole, stack it up. He always showed up when he went to the Pro Bowl, because he had to play a four-man front. And, you know, they had to call him off. I mean, he disrupted the game. But he's a great player and even better person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget this. I'm at the Packers Super Bowl in Dallas, waiting to catch a plane to come back here in Florida. And there's Leroy. And we talk about getting together, because he had a couple of restaurants in that Tampa area, and of course, and then he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable guy. Unbelievable. That's the best player I ever drafted.
Yeah, and his brothers were phenomenal folks as well. So it's fun to draft a guy. How hard is it to cut a guy?
You know, I think as one gets older, it's easier. Because Al Davis used to always say to me, Ronnie, you're blinking with my life when I make a mistake with players and all that. And that's kind of the approach you have to take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's my, you're not good enough. Paul Brown used to say, son, we're going to cut you. We'll let you begin your life's work. it's the cold, hard business, but that's part. Everybody wants to call it a business. It's not a business. It's still a sport, but it is part
mm-hmm.
of making a team, and the team has to be successful.
Do you trust the Wonderlic test, yes or no?
Yes.
You do?
I do. And here's why. Because it's going to tell you something. It's going to tell you whether or not, if you got a player, let me just rephrase that. If you have a player that you really like and he comes in with one of those low scores, you go to work to determine why there's a low score. And 49 times out of 50, it's because they have a reading problem or dyslexic or something. Mm-hmm. As far as playing football, they can play football. Do you get what I'm trying to say there?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it. Did today's GMs have it easy with just 7 rounds as opposed to like 17?
I don't think so, because the way it is right now, that salary cap, they've, you know, all those guys got to play. Mm-hmm. And if they think, you got to ride with them, you know? So it's hard. when I was in it, we would always think, boy, if we could get 3 or 4 out of this draft, that'd be great. You know, mm-hmm. you better get more than that now. Not 4, but you know, certainly you better get 3 guys that can walk right in and play.
I don't know if this is privileged information. Hopefully it's not. Give me a trade you really, really tried to make and just it didn't get done.
Let's see. I thought I had a trade with Baltimore so we could pick Ray Lewis. Mm. It fell through. I'm sorry, it wasn't Ray Lewis. Brian Urlacher.
Oh, worse, he went to the Bears.
Yeah, that's even worse, yeah. I was trying to get to, I thought I had it, and then I didn't have it.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
If you can't draft, give me the GM you want to draft for your team, like a Gil Brandt or a Bill Polian or somebody.
Wow, that's Well, you know, that's an interesting question. My goodness.
Jim Finks. And it can be somebody that's in the thing now. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I don't know those guys in now. So so we'd have to go back and probably be that guy that's running New England named Belichick.
Sure. Does he have help in his scouting department right now? How's that going up there?
I think it's going okay, hopefully. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Right. For people that don't know the joke, right? Your son's in the organization, is he not?
Yes, he is.
By the way, you can't sneak anywhere because you made it up there, and that makes the news in New England. Hey, Ron Wolf's on the sidelines. He's watching practice. Bill Belichick's finally going to listen to somebody.
You got
clout.
What he did is you can't. I mean, that's never going to happen. It's mm-hmm. kind of like that catch that Jefferson made Sunday. That's never going to happen. You know what I mean? What Bill Belichick did in free agency of football is incredible. Incredible. And being anxious to see if he can pass Shula.
Mm-hmm.
Takes it that far.
All right, bear with me. I got 2 more. Leroy Butler's fumble return with Reggie in the Lambeau Leap is hugely famous. I was sitting in my front yard because I grew up close enough that you could hear the cheers in Lambeau Field. And they are playing the Raiders, and I am listening to the radio, and you hear the play, and then you wait a couple of beats, and then you could hear and the biggest groan I ever heard in Lambeau Field was a fumble return. Were you around when Jack Tatum returned the fumble in Lambeau Field for the Raiders 107 yards or whatever after it kicked off John Brockington off the little option pass from Scott Hunter, the option pitch?
Yeah, no, I was there. That's the one time I was there before I took the job. And, you know, he set a record. And mm-hmm. Fortunately, that happened. Or we're going to lose. You know, we're going to lose to the Packers. Can you imagine that?
But I think that was 72. I think that was their good team. I think that was the team that Devine won the division with. But so it would have been a little less embarrassing.
Yeah, no, but... Wow, that was unbelievable. I John Polonchek was a coach with the Raiders when I was there, and of course he was a coach with the Packers then.
Mm-hmm.
And after the game, we accidentally ran into each other. He said that wasn't a fumble. That was whatever it was. It wasn't a fumble.
You know what?
Right. He might have been right.
You talk about how different Twitter is today, right? Like I would have been able to see that show instantly. That fumble instantly. Instead, I hear it on the radio because the games still had the blackout rule, and you had to wait for the Sunday night sports to come on at 10:30, at 10 o'clock to actually see the play. Trevor, if you don't know the play, I'll explain it to you later.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
The last thing I have for you is just how come you love football?
I was very fortunate. My dad was a football fan, and we grew up 18 miles north of Baltimore, and Baltimore had a team then, the Colts. And they were in the old All-America Conference. And Whitey Tittle was a quarterback. But we went down and watched Navy play Notre Dame, things like that, in Babe Ruth Stadium. And it just kind of bit me. I kind of became fascinated with those guys that could play the game and play quite well. Because in those days, you had to play both ways. And Tittle didn't, but so it was so interesting. You know, you grow up with a guy like Unitas, John Unitas, and there may never be a quarterback as good as Unitas was. And so,
how many GMs missed on him that they had to pick him out of a sandlot because
that's something. I think he was a ninth. I used to know this, but I don't remember it now. I think he was a ninth round pick of the Steelers. But I got to tell you a story about Leroy Butler's fumble. Okay.
Okay.
We're playing the Raiders, and it's Christmas Eve, and the Raiders come walking out of the dressing room in their T-shirts. And I'm thinking to myself, there is no way we're going to lose this game because those guys can't turn around and go back in now. Mm-hmm. They're out here. And, you know, our guys come out in parkas. They got beer grease on them. So practicing the warm-up, Al Davis told me, he said, his face, because he always stood on his, never thawed until the third quarter. Never thawed until the third quarter. But that's a great thing of being able to play there. You know? And it took me a while to grasp that. That you needed, you know, starting the end of October, your punter and kicker were kicking cinder blocks, actually. And it took me a while to grasp what you needed to play there. But we did a pretty good job of finding out. A couple of good receivers, good runners. We had a good team, no question about that.
What is it, 841, the winning percentage? Speaks for itself.
841. Love that number.
So, you know, GMs go up there, they don't have a number, right? Maybe that's what they should put next to you. Ron Wolf, 841.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. You are generous with your time and your memories of the franchise that you helped literally rebuild. And the success that is there today is very, very much rooted in what you put down when you came to our town. And we appreciate your time today. And just thanks so much. You add so much to the program. I know our viewers and listeners are going to enjoy everything you had to say about this. Thanks so much.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. As I said before, what a great place to finish one's career. In the Citadel, known as Green Bay Packers, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Wonderful. Thank you, fellas.
Thank you.
So a lightning round with a guy that got into the NFL in 1963 isn't so lightning-like, but that's reasonable. He's got a few memories to share.
I feel like I don't know why we're not expanding the show to 2 hours. I realize that's a lot to ask of people. Perhaps we need some of these people just to make the two-parters. You know, they did that with a lot of things. You know, Kojak and Columbo and West, yeah, Gunsmoke. So I don't know why we don't have a part two, but... I feel like we only scratched the surface with that guy, which is so much. And like I said, maybe if we just, because we keep it to the Packers, it's easier. But, you know, his 20 years with the Raiders when they were growing and Al Davis stories going on. And you know, he didn't even talk about John McKay, who coached that team in Tampa Bay, who was an unbelievable character and fantastic. So it's just
there's just a presence about him. I mean, like he just shows up and you're like, whoop, that's Ron Wolf.
This is one of those shows that the rest of the day I'm going to go around and go and things are going to pop in my head. And I go, why didn't I ask him that? You know, why didn't I ask him that? I should have asked him that. I don't know. So
I know you and I talk about all the people that you've been able to cross paths with in your career. Yeah. This is kind of a funny story. I oftentimes want to make sure that our schedules align when we're looking up to have a guest on. And so I got your time, right? We'll work around it. Whatever time works best for Ron. I'm driving yesterday and I owe Ron Wolf an email back to let him know what time, right? My phone rings. I was on the road a lot yesterday, and it's a number I don't recognize. I won't say where it's from.
Right.
I pick up, and I said, hi, this is Trevor. And he goes just like this, John. He goes, Trevor, this is Ron Wolf. And I was
and
like,
I want to tell you solar panels. No, not that guy. Different guy.
Nope. Wrong guy. Yeah. It was. There's just an amazing presence. in when you speak to a guy like that? What a history.
So the first time I met him, he was out here at ESPN to do a car wash or jump on one show. He had retired. And I get confused. My mother had told me, very good friends of the family, the Grabowskis. Oh, are you kidding? Roger and Kathy, they are great friends with him. My mom meant to say they were great friends with the Harlins. So that when I went and asked him about the Grabowski, he looked at me like, who's the Polish family in Green Bay that I don't know? So I call my mom back and I'm like, way to go, Mom. I just went and talked to Rob Wolf about the Grabowskis. He has no idea who they are. I think he meant the Harlins. So it's just, you know, this is why your mother should not be your resource on things. You should further vet stories like this. But yeah, so it was good to see him and make amends.
Well, that's kind of fun. That was a good idea, J.A. So we're wrapping up the top five list with your number one sports center.
The dramatic conclusion to the top five.
Yeah, this is – so I wrote down a bunch of the ones that I remembered in between here that you did. Great. I'm wondering if any of these are right.
What do you got?
I got McCutcheon, where the whole mascot pirate parade comes in and steals your board.
Right.
You go through an eyebrow waxing. That was pretty fun, where they're doing something with you have to, you know, look the part to be on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
And then there's one that I think may be your number one with Usain Bolt. Don't tell me that it's just track related. Mm-hmm. So, knowing you. And then there's another one, though, that I think you have an equal passion for.
What's that?
And it's you doing the soccer flop. Are either of those two number one?
They're not.
Damn it. That was, by the way, the soccer flop one, way up on my list, because I know you love the kicking.
The Bolt one was great. I took my son out of school to meet Bolt because I'm like, he's never going to get a chance to meet this guy again, and that record's going to stay forever. And so I made him write a little essay that he had to take back to his teacher as why. And he literally, now he's 7 or 8. He entitled the piece, "My Dad Is Not the Fastest Man in the World." Little imp. But what the really cool is Bolt signed his homework and he brought it into the teacher. I don't think the teacher even knew where that was. So that's
so there. Neither of them made it. Okay.
That didn't. If I was going to do one that I liked for soccer, is we had it ran briefly and there was so much pushback. They put it on the shelf. We did one on soccer hooliganism and I get hit over the head with a beer bottle and I just collapse. Same hallway. Down I go. And it ends with them chanting at Dave Revson, the anchor is a wanker. But it got a lot of bad club, so they put that one on the shelf. That's couldn't go. Word. Yeah, there were other ones. I ate hot dogs with Kobayashi. I stripped down in my underwear for poker players. We did a great one with all of us one time, all the sports center anchors, back when we had fewer sports centers, with Joe Montana, where he loses a Super Bowl ring, and eventually Rich Eisen finds it because he's eating it in his clam chowder. Which is great. Georges St. Pierre's, you remember that one?
I don't know if I do.
He's in the octagon, and I'm supposed to go get a post-it, and he kind of invites me in, and I'm like, what was crazy about that is every take, they wanted George to shimmer, so he had an oil guy. So you'd take they'd cut, oil up George, and then they'd oil up George, and they'd come back. George had an oil man, which is great.
I love how he just pushes the post-it note and says, well, come on in.
I'm just going to write that on my hand. We'll be fine. Yeah, I've been really pushing to go with some of them. So that's number awesome. One, and it's because it's sentimental, even more sentimental, was the first one I got to do. Because before that, all my buddies back in Wisconsin just thought I was here, shamming Chris Berman's car. I had done a lot of ESPN News, which wasn't in the mainstream. It'd be on for like a half hour in the middle of the day that you'd get on there. So when I finally – and I had done some sports. When I finally did a sports center commercial, it was like a validation that, you really do work there. And the one I did was awesome. Called the first one I did was called Jersey Day. As in New Jersey and not like everybody's wearing jerseys to work. And I'm there with Ken Danico, the captain of the Devils. They had won the Stanley Cup and the Nets had just drafted Kenyon Martin first. So we talk about Jersey Day, and then I hold up a CD and I literally plug the new Bon Jovi CD and you zip over and there's Bon Jovi in the newsroom playing. So the first one I get, I'm hanging out and I'm just in the green room waiting to go with Bon Jovi. I'm already terrified I'm going to ruin the whole thing because I'm not an actor. And then I'm sitting there with John Bon Jovi and Sambora and the rest of these clowns. Like, how uncomfortable is that?
Hell of a debut.
And it's the same thing. They're always like, oh, this will be easy. You must do 100 of these things. No, I don't. I haven't even done one of these things. Jeez. So
that's awesome.
So that was the first one. And they could not have been cooler. Like I said, people came to us. Here's just Bon Jovi in the newsroom. And I'm like, it's not as great. And whatever their new CD is, Crush or whatever it was. And then they just start playing It's My Life. And then I keep thinking, and that's my life, which is absurd.
And how many total have you done?
I have no idea. I bet probably 40 or 50. I think Van Pelt and I, maybe Stu right now, are probably the most, the late Stuart Scott. That Kenny Mayne did a bunch of them, but he's less. So I've got Van Pelt?
You mean Bedwetter.
Bedwetter. My favorite is when they fold him up in the trunk of the BMW with Rich Beamer, and he gives him the ride. He gets out of the trunk of his little sporty BMW. So.
Horizontal stripes with CC Sabathia.
Yeah. And then I have somewhere there's a DVD that we did on him, and I hosted it at one point. It came out with some book. But in there, then when we went Vegas and did Tiger, I did a little piece with him about the commercial, about his whole thing. And it's completely nonsensical. And it's actually kind of, Tiger's really kind of funny in it. He's really sort of, let his guard down. I make fun of him for wearing brown golf shoes and some other things. And he was, but we went and did that. He was doing Tiger Jam, and that was until they went to LA. It was the only time anybody we ever traveled to somebody. That tells you how big Tiger was, just in case you were wondering. Bon Jovi came to the newsroom. We had to go to Tiger.
Yeah. Where else are you going to get these stories? If you don't like and subscribe and follow Inside Wisconsin, you are absolutely nuts. These stories are only going to be shared here. We hope you have a great Thanksgiving, Wisconsin. That's John. I'm Trevor, as you were. We'll see you next time. Remember to subscribe on YouTube. Leave a review. Smash the like button. Just get with us.
Inside Wisconsin is brought to you by Bay Care Clinic, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, Roltec, Festival Foods, Capital Credit Union, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, American Family Insurance, Miller Lite, and Aaron's Company.
Sit down.